Hello and welcome to the Authors Speaking to Authors podcast. In this episode, Rob Parsons, the man behind popular titles The Heart of Success, The Wisdom House and The 60 Minute Father, spent some time speaking with David Palmer about his book, The Three Resolutions. David is a personal development trainer and writer with experience providing bespoke training to help people seeking self-improvement. Coming up next.
Well, David, it's great to have you with us today on this podcast. And first of all, congratulations on writing your book. I think it's your second book, isn't it?
Yes. Thank you for inviting me, Rob. It's my second book and my first in the field of personal development.
Yeah. Writing books is hard. Did you find it a tough book to write?
Yes. As you might see from the cover of the copy you have there, that's the third edition. That's 5 years of writing it, editing it, juggling the chapters around and rewriting it. So it's a hard process, and I'm sure you've experienced the same. Getting it right is almost impossible, because every time you reread it, you think, I should have done that better.
Well, I think the trick with writing books is you have two things, really, and sometimes they're opposing. You have to be teachable, so you want people's opinions. What do you think of this? What do you think of that? And I don't know if you ever find this, David, but it's like a painter taking, you know, the sheet off their canvas. You suddenly show your baby to the world, and often you're not short on getting opinions. So you've got to be teachable. But secondly, you've got to know when to stop, haven't you, and just say, you know what, I've got to put a cover on this thing and get going. Did you find that?
Yes, and as I'm sure you've experienced, while you're writing, you are learning new stuff, which you suddenly realise influences what you've written, and you go back and you adjust and you amend what you've done with that new learning in mind.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point, that you learn as you go. I think a lot of writers think you have to sit down with a file, with all your research, all you've done, but absolutely you're learning, and changing. Now, the book is called The Three Resolutions, David. Tell us why you chose that title.
Well, many years ago, when I was a serving police officer in a busy station in Cwmbran in Gwent, I discovered the science of time management, and it's a way of improving my productivity. And I dabbled in a few of the common books that were around at the time, but then I discovered a book called First Things First by Stephen Covey. And as soon as I picked it up, I realized this book was different. And he didn't just deal with time management, he dealt with self-management in the context of time and interpersonal relationships. And the way he wrote the book and his terminology and the depth of thinking amazed me. And as a result, I ended up reading his second book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, which is the one most people are familiar with. And then his third book, called Principle-Centered Leadership. And one chapter in that was called The Three Resolutions. And it's the shortest chapter in the book, but the content of it just hit a note with me. And as a result of that, I started thinking, well, this could do with some expansion, which seems a bit rude.
No.
but as I say, it was the shortest chapter in the book, but it made me think deeper and deeper into the subject matter.
Yeah, oh, well done. No. And what particularly in that chapter touched you?
It established within me a sense of, this makes common sense, but it's not common practice, which again is a term he often used. The three resolutions relate to self-discipline, character and competence, and having a sense of noble purpose and a desire to serve others. And that just stuck with me for some reason. I can't explain why at the time. I just read this is almost a life philosophy in and of itself. Never mind all the other material that Stephen Covey wrote about this. This small part could be a philosophy in and of itself.
I mean, those are pretty lofty things that you're talking about there. But let's go back for a moment to the time management problem. What was your life like? Was it chaotic, or you?
Well, one of the disadvantages of being in an emergency service is that you are at the beck and call of everybody all of the time. And I used to say, and this didn't really apply to the late 90s, but the invention or the availability of the mobile phone suddenly meant a vast increase in the number of interruptions you get in a day. So managing yourself in the context of all those conflicting demands, because you'd be in the middle of one thing and something else would arise. As I say, that's the nature of the emergency services. But I found that in the police service, there was no training in managing time or managing yourself. You learnt from your tutor constable, and only from your tutor constable, how to manage your workload. And the most common way is the scrap of paper with the big list of to-dos on, which is, it's a practical solution, but it's not the best solution. So I started looking into organising myself and my work so that I could give the appropriate amount of attention to the appropriate things at the appropriate time, and it just developed from that.
I mean, I know you eventually wrote a book, didn't you, for the police on time management?
Yes,
so, yeah, it's fascinating. Isn't it? I don't know if you've come across this phrase. A friend of mine who was involved in the police said that the tip he was given was run to a fire and walk to a fight. Have you come across that phrase? And he said it served me well, pretty well. You know, run to a fight if someone's dying, get there fast, but always walk to a fight. Why did they say that, walk to a fight?
I think it's because it gives you time to set yourself and prepare yourself to deal with it without the adrenaline rush that might be called. Plus the fact that by the time you get to a fight that you've walked to, very often the people involved are already too tired to fight with you. And that's it's quite a practical piece of information to have. I remember, as an aside, I walked around the corner once into the bus station at Bryn Mawr, and two factories had their Christmas dues. They were fighting. And I just stopped, stepped back, called it in, wait until some vans appeared, and then stepped into the parade.
Yeah, that's
stupid.
Very good idea. Actually, it's not a bad principle of time management, isn't it? That during our day, work out what you should run to and what you should walk to. And perhaps even, I don't know if you agree, perhaps even more important, what you shouldn't turn up to at all. In other words, you're just saying, do you agree with, yeah?
It's a common misconception that one has to increase productivity by doing more. And I think it's Peter Drucker who said, there's nothing more pointless than doing efficiently that which need not be done at all.
Yeah.
So yes, picking what not to do is just as important as making sure that you are doing the important stuff.
Isn't that something? And obviously that was a big help to you in the police, and your book will be a big help in the police. Okay, so let's go back now to these resolutions. Three resolutions. Just remind us of them again, David.
The first resolution is, and I'm quoting Stephen Covey here, is that to overcome the restraining forces of appetites and passions, I resolve to work on self-discipline and self-denial.
Okay, what do you mean?
Right, the restraining forces I like to equate to the equivalent of the police officer in the pursuing car in a car chase. The people would have seen it on the television. The police officer just brings his car up to the rear corner of the pursued car, just gives it a gentle nudge off its line of approach, and physics then takes over and the car goes into a spin and ends up in a complete mess. A restraining force is something that pushes you away from your intended path.
Ah.
So in this particular resolution, when we're talking about self-discipline, we're talking about the restraining forces of appetites and passions. When Stephen Covey wrote about them, he was focused more on things like overeating, drinking, smoking, and vices of that nature. And I've expanded it into all the other addictions, and I call them addictions, even though they're not illegal addictions, but they're things that take you away from what you're supposed to be doing. For example, now, excessive social media, computer games, television on all the time. People, unfortunately, if they're not focused on what they need to be doing, will find themselves distracted by these things. So they're the restraining forces, the things that take us away from what we want to be doing. Now, as far as self-discipline is concerned, I equate that to, or I relate to, how discipline, when you're being brought up, is almost a dirty word. There are something like four definitions of discipline, three of which imply that if you don't do what you're told, then you will be punished for it.
Mm.
This area of discipline, I refer to the definition being one of a code of conduct that you follow. And in the case of the three resolutions, it's a code of conduct that you design for yourself. ideally and hopefully one based on positive principles. But it's self-discipline is then something that you do what you don't necessarily want to do on the basis that it serves you better. And self-denial is about not doing what you want to do on the basis that doing them doesn't serve you. And when I say you, I mean you and those you love and those you serve.
Now that's really interesting. Somebody gave me a great tip years ago, and I try to do it. Do difficult tasks first. I used to do a lot of work with lawyers, helping lawyers, and I like you, I've not written a book on time management like you, but I have run some courses on time management, and I used to say that most lawyers and most people have got a file in the corner of their room. It's about this thick, and it's been there for about 3 years. And they meant to get round to it, but they don't get round to it, blah, 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 blah. And today, he decides he's really going to hit it. So he gets into his office early, and Joe's there at 6 o'clock in the morning, and he thinks, just have a cup of coffee. Warns to the coffee machine, sues to the coffee machine, they begin to talk. And then someone pops their head round his door and says, can you spare me a minute? And I say to people, if anybody says that to you, they're lying to you. They don't mean you spare me a minute, they mean give me 10 minutes, because it will take you 10 minutes to get going. They're saying, will you give me 20 minutes of your life? And that's how his day goes by. Rings his wife at 5:30. He says, I can't be home tonight as I promised to take Jack to the football match. I've got to get this file done. But you promised, I know, but don't get on my back. But honestly, if he'd hit it at the time, it wasn't that bad. And it grows in gruesomeness. You believe if you're good at that difficult task, gremlins will leap out and devour you. And you've talked about that in some of your books, haven't you?
Yes. One of the things I noticed in the police service, and before anyone accuses me of having a go at my colleagues, I was one of the best proponents of this, is the amount of time you spend trying to get out of doing something is usually inversely proportional to the amount of time it would have taken to have done it in the first place. You can spend days putting something off that would literally have taken half an hour to do. So, yeah, it's easy to procrastinate on the basis of I really don't want to do this, and sitting there and hoping the phone will ring as an excuse to not do what's sat in front of you.
Dave, before we go on to the second resolution, can I just ask you this? I've been through periods of my life where I've just been too busy. And actually, I think a fair chunk of it, although I'm not very proud to say it, was born out of personal insecurity. I'm trying to prove myself. Look how busy I am. How would you ever get by without me? Do you see that as a problem?
I see that in a problem with colleagues, but that's not to say that I wasn't guilty of it.
No.
It's just that I observed it in others.
Yeah.
People who would say that they valued their family more than anything else in the world, and in any time management seminar, if you ask people what they value more than anything else, they will invariably say family.
Yeah.
And a couple of times I said, well, I know you, John, for example. When there was a murder, you were working 16 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Where did your family come in that?
Yeah.
You know, that 168 hours, you were sleeping for 7 days, or seven periods of 8 hours. Yeah. Where did your family fit in? And I was careful to make it a compassionate approach, because one of the right answer, if you like, which doesn't excuse it, but explains it. The right answer would be they're earning money so that they can give the family the life that they feel their family deserves. But ultimately, you want to say to them, your kids will remember you for being there rather than the toys you purchased with the money that you obtained whilst you weren't there.
I heard somebody once say, a psychologist said, we're so busy giving our kids what we didn't have, we don't have time to give them what we did have. But let me just go, and then we really will get on to the second resolution, but this is fascinating. Let's go back to that a second, because you can understand somebody working long hours when there's a murder on, because you're trying to catch this villain before he or she disappears. But the problem is, so often, is we just get into it as a lifestyle. So there's no murders on, no banks have been broken into, but we're still working those long hours. That can be a problem, can't it?
Yeah. Yes, incidents could serve to add to your working day. But another thing I noticed was that when the murders came on, that people would abandon all the other work.
Yeah.
And so when the murder finished, they then had this huge pile of work that they had to catch up on.
Yeah.
Hence the continued long working days. I developed because I was into time management, I developed a passion for making sure that all those other things that I had to do would be slotted in during the murder, because a routine murder would be an 8 o'clock briefing. You'd be given what they call an action, which is an issue, go and interview somebody or go and find something. And you'd make contact with whoever, and you'd have a two-hour gap with nothing to do.
Yeah.
A lot of my colleagues would then not do anything else. Well, I would fit in telephone calls, statements from other people. I would fill my time with the stuff that they were putting off. So come the end of the murder, I would carry on with an eight-hour day. They would carry on with 16-hour days because they had to catch up with the stuff they put off. Because in fairness, nobody had taught them that you can do these other things whilst you're...
On the other stuff as well. Well, that's essentially the resolution number one of personal discipline. Tell us about resolution number two in your book.
Resolution number two is to overcome the restraining forces of pride and pretension. I resolve to work on character and competence. Stephen Covey wrote of character and competence as being the two core elements of trustworthiness. Character being easier to define as things that are poor character rather than good character, because people know what's good character and people know what's bad character. People want to work with people of character, and they want to avoid people of bad character. So developing a personal character that is as best it can possibly be and congruent with what you believe, I think, is very important. The pretension relates to people pretending to be something they're not. In a professional context, it's often people who talk a good job but aren't really very good at doing one. The ideal is a balance between the two, where perhaps ideally more to the character side. It's developing a values-driven, conscience-driven life, essentially, so that people can trust you because they know that David Palmer always does what he says, when he says he'll do it, and the way he says he'll do it, as opposed to someone who says, well, if we get him on a good day, that's the time to approach him to do some work for you.
It's fascinating. You know, when we, I do a lot of work with a national charity, and when we take people on, we often think of three C's, actually: character, competence, and chemistry. So competence, can they do the job? Chemistry, can they get on with other people? And the character that you've spoken out. And I'll be absolutely honest with you, we got great people. But I'd rather have somebody who wasn't quite as good as another candidate, but had a wonderful character. You could trust them. They weren't going to throw their toys out of the pram when it went a bit wrong. And chemistry, they got on with other people. Because you can have prima donnas who were fantastic, but they destroy organizations. And you've talked about that in your book, I know. Yeah.
Yes, I remember a colleague who was respected as a very good detective. But he was also a character in the small C, jolly, fun to be with sense. And when he went down, so to speak, he took several good, otherwise good people with him. He was such fun to be with that when he was committing what the organisation thought to be possibly criminal offences, and certainly internal disciplinary offences, they were happily going along with him because he was fun to be with. My advice to people is when you see someone like that is you avoid them like the plague.
Let's talk about the third resolution, David.
The third resolution is to avoid the restraining forces of aspiration and ambition. I resolve to work on noble purpose and the provision of service to others.
Well, that's a mouthful. What's that all happening?
Yes, and I nearly forgot it, to be frank. It's about having a sense of purpose. So it's all very well being self-disciplined and having character and competence in some, but what for? And ideally, what for is the benefit not just of yourself and your immediate family, for example, but also the benefit of others. But not necessarily and not primarily to the expense of oneself. There's nothing wrong with listening to WIIFM, which, if you've never heard of it, is What's in It for Me radio. When you do something for somebody else, you get something. There's no question about that. Anyone who suggests that they do something completely selflessly is confused, is misinformed, because just if you do something only because it makes you feel respect and it makes you feel good as well as benefits other people, I think that's a wonderful thing. If you do something primarily and solely for your own personal satisfaction, That's not quite the same. We're talking about service to others that you do out of certainly a sense of contribution, but not one that's at this, that provides any sort of self-sabotage or self-destruction in the process.
Fantastic. I can't honestly believe our time has gone. We've talked about murders and running to fights and not running to fights and doing difficult tax first and three resolutions. As we come to a close, David, is there any one thing you'd like to say to your readers why they might want to read this book and a gem they might find in it?
I find that even the best of us sometimes think there's a gap between where we are and where we would like to be. For most of the people I know, that gap's very narrow because they've done the work necessary to get from far, far from where they want to be to near where they want to be. But it's that last tip that's the hardest. I firmly believe that applying the three resolutions, whether you read it from me or Dr. Covey, is key to not only getting what you want, but helping those you love and respect get what they want as well.
Brilliant. Fantastic. David, absolute joy to talk to you today. David Palmer's book, so the three resolutions. And David, just tell us your website, will you, where people can get a copy of the book?
It's threeresolutionsguy.com, all one word, no www. That's the easiest way to, easiest route to the Amazon website that actually provides it.
Brilliant. Okay, thanks for it. David, lovely to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for the invitation.